Welcome to our special 10-year anniversary podcast series. I'm Stefan.
And I'm Paul.
And we're your hosts. We started Stories We Don't Tell with our good friend Brian Bennis back in 2014.
And from the beginning, we've been recording all the stories. So for this series, we went back through our archives and picked stories from 10 storytellers, one from each year.
And each episode, we'll chat with one of the tellers and hear a story from them. On today's episode, we're talking with Monica Homburg. And we're here with Monica Homburg. Monica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So for folks who may not have heard any of your stories previously, I want to give as a short description or bio about who you are and what you're up to.
All right. So I am a comedian and a voice actor and a producer, a bunch of other things that make very little money. And I lived in Toronto at some point, and that's how I met you guys and did the storytelling stuff with you guys. And a very pivotal time in my life, especially meeting you guys was such a joy, hanging out and everything.
So it's interesting. Okay, you said that's where you met us when you moved to Toronto. And I'm curious because you talked about this before that you're obviously a comedian, you're a performer and everything. But what sort of draws you from that world into the storytelling world? And like, where did you, because it seems like a thing that you get into a city and you're like, I'm going to like go and participate, meet people this way. How do you move from comedy to storytelling, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, they're similar. And I've not always been in comedy. Like, I only started doing comedy a few years before you met me. So I was an actor before, whatever, like any sort of performance stuff. I guess I need a ton of attention. But I figured, okay, I like storytelling. I had done a bit of it in Vancouver, maybe in New York before I came over. And so it was kind of, okay, well, that's something I could do. And then, yeah, in terms of you guys were the ones I did most of the storytelling stuff with. I don't in general do storytelling events just because a lot of it can be kind of cheesy, where it's just like, look at me, I'm telling a funny story. And I'm just like, well, why are we doing this? I don't really connect with it. But when I went to your event, I felt like this was very truthful. People were indeed telling stories that you don't generally tell at a party. And it was so intimate and honest and sincere and everything. And I felt like a real connection to wanting to do that.
Awesome. I feel like one of the criteria that we sort of had in our heads for choosing the different people we talked to in this series were the folks who sort of defined specific eras of the show. And there was a time, maybe a year or two when not only were you telling a lot of stories, but you also were just coming to a lot of the workshops and providing sort of that extra voice that we so often need and value. And so I'm curious your experience of the workshop process of both your own stories, but then also of other people's.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I thought it was such a great opportunity, obviously, to meet people when I was newer in the city, but also to have other eyes on your project and on someone else's project. I find that like when you're writing a story, especially when it has to do with your life and your experiences, like sometimes you don't know what details should be there or shouldn't be there. And it's when someone else listens to it that they're like, you know what? You don't need any details about this part. Like, that's not really that important to the story. And I found that it was really exciting to hear other people's stories and feel out like where they were at and like what they thought was important about their story. And it was really, it was a very fun experience.
So then you get to our event and you share a story. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe take us through as much as you remember, like anything, like any kind of memories or anything about your experience as to like, obviously you enjoyed it to some kind of degree because you came back many times. So I assume, unless you, I don't know, maybe you're, you know,
she just hates us and just wants that to be known.
Maybe you're into that. I don't know.
I mean, I have talked, you know, on the storytelling show, on your storytelling show, about being a masochist. So, I mean, potentially that plays into it. But you know what's funny is I remembered something very, I think, hilarious about the first time I told a story. So I decided to tell a story about, you know, being into, it's not exactly BDSM, but like that sort of domination dynamic. And I showed up to the night we were telling the story, and I had moved to Toronto, and there I was working for a company in Toronto, but I had been working for the company when I was in Vancouver and in New York. So they had never physically met me. And I don't think we even talked, maybe we met on Zoom one time. So I showed up to your event to tell the story, and one of my coworkers was there. And I had never met them in person. So now not only was I meeting them in person, but then I was also telling this story about BDSM and getting into that. It was like, oh, fuck, like only me. Like there was literally, I knew no one in the city. And that happened to be the one person that I kind of knew that would be at this event randomly.
And how was that conversation after?
Super awkward, like terribly awkward. Yeah, really, really awkward. I mean, there was, we didn't know each other, and then she knew too much about me, and she was kind and lovely, but it was a bizarre feeling. And I think she said, you know, the most dreaded thing to hear as a performer, which is, that was so brave. Mm. Like, oh, okay, we can just die now, but thank you.
Yeah, there are a few stories where when you finish telling, bravery is the response you want to get. But I would say 80% usually, yeah, it's a little bit more, ah, shit, what did I do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said too much. That was the feeling.
And it's like that kind of feeling also when somebody says that too, you're like, yeah, but this is a story about my life and I'm being very personal and I'm sharing this about myself. So I should feel brave just for being myself. Is that what you're trying to tell
me? It's like, yeah, just for existing, I'm kind of brave, you know?
Like
you
should
maybe don't do that. Maybe just don't be yourself. Like that would be better. But yeah, I mean, except for that, I really enjoyed telling the story. It was nice to talk to people after who were kind of like, oh shit, you know, that's something in my life that I don't like to talk about. So I, you know, I feel uncomfortable about it. So I appreciate you sharing that. And then I got to become friends with you guys. So that was awesome. And yeah, I really enjoyed telling stories with you guys because the environment was so honest and intimate and non-cheesy actory of like, here's me telling this story. Aren't I funny and cute? And aren't I, you know, here's my quirkiness. Like I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'd be curious to know if over the years, as you've worked it, if your relationship to storytelling has changed at all. You know, you joined us a couple years into your comedy career, and then you've now been telling stories. And the story that the folks will hear from you is actually one of your more recent stories with us. And so, yeah, have you changed how you think about storytelling, or how that's impacted anything else?
I mean, I literally don't do storytelling except with you guys at this point, because I don't get anything, and this is a very personal thing, I don't get anything out of it in a general sense. I do get something out of it when I do it with you guys, because I do enjoy the workshop process, and I, like I said, enjoy the intimacy and the community that you guys have cultivated. In terms of like my relationship to storytelling, I don't know if it's changed that much. I was going through such a transitional period when I met you guys. You know, I had moved, relationship had ended. There was just a lot of different feelings that I had. And it was such a joy to be able to put those to paper and get them out in some way. I think I feel less of a conflict at this point in my life. So maybe I do less storytelling for that reason. But it was very therapeutic without it being like, without, I hope, trauma dumping on people.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know, I consider, to me, with your comedy, there's, you know, I feel like there's a lot of intersection with your comedy and the type of storytelling that you've done with us.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about how this is such a, I don't want to say you're being brave, But I do. I've always sort of admired that you do talk about things that are difficult for some people to talk about, you know, and you really go to the to explore these places. And I think it's really incredible. And especially for an audience in our kind of environment, why so many people were big fans of yours is that you're able to talk about these things and make them, you know, funny and entertaining, but also like have depth to them and bring, you know, an emotional sort of quality to them. But like, what's your approach sort of connecting storytelling and whether it's, or your comedy, however you'd like to frame it, and being able to access and talk about, you know, some of the subjects that you do touch on?
I mean, I grew up being kind of told in almost every way that I was like very, very weird and unusual, which is funny now because I sometimes just blend into society and no one notices. But I think that because I felt so weird about myself and like I had to hide all these aspects of myself, you know, as an adult, I don't want to feel that way, you know, and I'm very fortunate to not work in an office environment. So I don't have to feel like I'm constrained by like having this complete other life. Like I, you know, obviously not everybody knows all the weird shit in my life, like every time I meet them, but I feel like this is doing storytelling and doing comedy is like a nice way of being like, yes, you know, we're all kind of weird and fucked up and that's okay. And it's okay to not be perfect. I guess that's the thing that I've always had to deal with is feeling this like, oh my God, I have failed as a human being because I'm not perfectly financially responsible and all these other aspects. And it's nice to be able to express that and be like, you know what, I'm human and here's some things about me. And if you don't like them, that's okay. But here they are. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question exactly.
No, that's great. Yeah.
No, yeah, it totally does. I mean, I feel like that's a perfect segue into the story that we will hear from you, which is about failure.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about your relationship to failure and what got you interested in telling this particular story.
Oh my God. So, I mean, that's just the hugest conflict in my life because I knew what I wanted to do and that I wanted to be a performer very young, right? So it wasn't like one of those things where it's like, I realized late in my life that I wanted to, like, I pursued acting since I was like 16 and I have gotten virtually nowhere. And so it's been very hard as I get older. Now I'm like going to turn 50 in a month. Like that feeling of, oh my God, this is the fear I had when I would watch people and hear about people who were like middle-aged and they had never achieved success despite working and trying to work in their field most of their life. I was like, this is my greatest fear. And as the years passed, it became very, very much a reality, right? And so feeling that feeling of like, wow, I fucked up somehow, you know, it was so pervasive. And it especially was pervasive. It was pervasive before because as I mentioned, and for listeners, you'll hear it on the show. But when I was doing a little bit before that story, I had done a one-person play about failure. And so when COVID hit and I was faced with like the emptiness that COVID brought and like, oh shit, not only is COVID happening, which sucks. I mean, people have a way worse experience than I do, obviously. But that feeling of like, now I'm at a stalemate, but stagnancy, I guess. Like now there are things I can do. There are creative things I can do, but effectively here I am losing more time when I already felt like I had lost all this time, you know? So that was my relationship to failure is like, it's a constant conflict of like, wow, you know, I've done a lot in my life. When I like look at stuff and I sometimes make lists, I realize like I've done a lot, but I obviously am not able to make a living off performing. And that is what I was always aiming for. So that's like a bit of a mental struggle that I've had to accept over the past few years.
You mentioned COVID there, which is interesting because we're trying to do 10 in 10. So we tried to find someone for every year. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the Monica years were a couple years before this because you moved, you know, out of the city. And so the consistency of being around your stories was earlier, but you did tell a story at our one show that we tried to do online in 2021.
Yeah, must have been, right?
2021. Yeah. And it was the only show we did in 2021. I think we did one. And then we bailed until I think the fall of 2022, I think, was when we finally got our feet back under us. And so I'm curious what your experience was in trying to workshop that story in the A, in the middle of COVID, B, you know, working with us when none of us had done this in a year or two. It was a very different experience, at least for us. And so I'm curious what yours was.
Very good for me because I got to see you guys. And so it was nice to have that, especially during this period of like, wow, everything kind of sucks. And we all kind of, you know, we're all like unmoored. Everyone felt a little bit unmoored and confused. And so it was fun to see you guys and workshop that. I mean, it was Zoom, so it's not the same thing as being, you know, in your apartment, Stefan, you know, hanging out with you and your bro, you know, like the rest of the people, like, that's awesome. But I still enjoyed it.
So before we hear that story, I don't really have a question for you, but I wanted to stay on the record that, so during this time that we call the Monica years, you and I started doing, we did a few stories together.
Oh God, yes. Those are great.
And I want to just say that, I don't know. So, you know, my opinion, you know, when people say, oh, as a writer, you got to work a lot to find your writing voice. I feel the same kind of way in terms of a performance voice.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I have like, as you know, whether you, everybody out there likes it or not, I have a pretty specific way that I kind of tell stories now and everything like that. And I have to say that it was through working with you that I was able to find that voice of mine.
Because
when we would we were telling stories and I just, there was something, the way that we were working off each other, that the audience I felt was really responding, and it really helped me kind of develop my own sort of voice as a performer. So I appreciate that. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to put that on the record and say that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I miss telling stories with you, and we'll have to get you back here. Although we just did a big Christmas show.
We did a Christmas show. And whether, I don't know if you guys will include this on, but like, so you and I, when we did the story, I think the stories that we did together were all centered around this fictional detective agency that we had. Right. And that was so fun. And then years later, Paul, you sent me an email that you had gotten from someone who wanted to hire us.
Oh, yeah. As detectives. That's right. Because we put up a website, like a fake website and everything. Yeah.
Take the job.
Yeah.
Well, and like, if you listen to that story, and I kind of wish you guys would include clips, like we had fake advertisements on it that were I don't remember most of them, but I do remember, has your roommate stolen your toilet paper? Like those were, it seems very fictional. Like maybe the detective agency isn't really doing these kind of jobs, but apparently it's enough to convince someone that we're professionals. So that's good.
Yeah.
I love that.
We will dive in then to the COVID years for just a brief second and hear this story about failure from Monica.
I do this all the time. I work myself to depletion, obsessively trying not to fail. Because if I do fail at anything, even 25%, my mind is so mean to me that, no, well, I can't go to that place. I just have to do everything right. but I did it. I put these shows together. I did my day job. I seemed like a sane person, and I burnt myself out doing it. But that's okay. That's okay because I did it and I didn't fuck up. And then when I rest, there's finally peace. Finally, I am good with myself. Finally, I can see the qualities that make me special. I feel light, happy, radiant, comfortable, my best self. Finally, in this place of wrung out, I am serene. Yes, my friend Natasha says, because the voices finally stop. Oh, that's it. Because when I overload myself, I get to this point where I'm so tired, I'm so depleted that my brain doesn't have the energy to be critical. You're such a loser. You're not trying hard enough. You can't be if this is where you're at. This is how far you've gotten at your age? People think you're pathetic. They have to, because you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. It's mid-July 2019. I am past that blissful crash again, and now we're back in I'm a do-nothing loser land. A month before, I got back from doing a stand-up festival in LA. 2 weeks before, I produced my show for the fifth time, this time at Montreal Comic Con. But today, I was 26 days from my 45th birthday. And that was no good. The critical voices were very loud. But what are you doing now? I see there's a festival in New York City accepting submissions. You have to write a new one-person show. Send in the pitch for your new show idea, and if it's accepted, you'll write and perform it. Yeah, there you go. That's a goal. Submit for this festival. That is doing something now. I go through the obsessive research process. What could I come up with that would excite me? What would I want to write about? Finally, I have it. On her 45th birthday, comedian Monica Hamburg buys $50 worth of online psychic readings about her career. What does a psychic cat have to say about her future? What is she doing wrong, according to a demonic clown? What did the psychic cat say, in case you're wondering? Apparently, my ideas are not only received well, but they will pan out for me. The psychic cat has hope for my future. I'll take it. The demonic clown? Useless. I love my show idea. It is fucking clutch, as the kids say. I submit. I'll know on August 30th. This is a really good idea. They're gonna accept me. Yeah. August 30th, I refreshed my email. A lot. Okay, not yet. Not yet. It's a good idea, Monica. It's gonna happen. 8 p.m. Email. Subject line, congratulations. Greetings. SoloCom and the Pit are thrilled to inform you that you have been accepted to SoloCom 2019. Oh my God, I did it. I fucking did it. Oh my fucking God, no. I'm gonna have to do it. Fuck. All the failure fairies come out. Are you kidding? You're gonna write a whole one-person show in 3 months to perform on stage in New York City? Oh yeah, that's gonna be fucking wonderful. You're gonna fail so hard. And you're gonna spend a lot of time and money doing it. Wow, this is all a real overreach for what you got going on. Wow, but I did it. I did do it. I went from having nothing to putting together a creative, funny, honest show that was ultimately about how I feel I'm failing. At the end of November 2019, I performed my solo show on stage in New York City. I really did it. And it didn't go perfectly, but that was something too. It hadn't gone over the way I obsessively planned so that no one would ever have a critical thought about me, so that no one would sound like it sounds in my head. The chorus of YouTube commenters that live in my brain were active, but I held my own. I was centered. I was okay. It would get better. It was a pretty good start. They sent out an email congratulating us all. If you're based in New York City, we'd love to have your show back here. We're booking for 2020, so reach out to us. I'm not local, I wrote back, but I'll be back in April. I'd love to do my show again. Yes, April 2020, I do it again. A few days later, I received an email from a venue I wanted to rent back home in Montreal. I needed a cool and low cost place to execute the next part of my plan, which would silence the brain chorus. If I continued to do my own shows, the type of creative and personal projects that I wanted, and leaned into that even more, I'd really grow as a performer. And I'd have to learn to trust myself, the thing that was so deeply lacking. I could fix that. I could fix that with some intense work. Sure, I'd done a ton of things that should have led me to have trust in myself. Like the thing I just did. But this would do it. I put on a show weekly. I had just needed a membership at this venue to open up, and it had. And by the new year, I could start this phase. Yes. I set up a series of 8 shows from February to March 2020. Panel, new format, experimental shows, each show with a different theme. I pitched all the local papers and blogs. Each week, I'd fight the sky-high anxiety and the screaming failure voices. No one is going to show up. You're going to fail. If people show up, they're going to feel pity for you because no one showed up and you're failing so hard. Keep pushing. Don't stop. It's all your fault if you don't succeed. I can't let that be right. It's too hard. This is hard, but it's not as hard as realizing that's true. March 13th, 2020. Facebook message. Hi, Monica. We're going to have to close the venue down tonight. And shut down. I had done the 6th show of that series. A newspaper interview I did came out just in time to advertise the 7th show, which wouldn't happen. And it was snowing. I was depressed. What the fuck? I had a plan. I was doing the thing. But I was also relieved. I was exhausted, and the shows being shut down meant I didn't fail. But for COVID, who knows what could have been? I didn't fail. Would I have failed? I don't know. Wasn't I always failing? When it came down to it, my dad would say, when I was in my 20s and a struggling actor, "It would be really nice if you were famous. It would finally make sense when I tell people what you do." It'd be nice for me too. I'm working on it. And he would sigh and say, "Well, I hope I live long enough to see that happen." And he didn't. So whose fault is that? How to Fail Workshop. Okay, why should I attend this workshop? The unrealistic expectations we place on ourselves seldom allow us to realize that we will, of course, fail in some areas of our lives, particularly in our careers, and that failing well is therefore a skill we need to learn above most others. Wow. Okay, learning to fail better. Yeah, this is it. This is the ticket. I'm going to purchase a ticket. Register for site. Done. Log into site. Your account is temporarily disabled. That's weird. Okay. Let's just purchase as a guest. Enter my credit card information. The page freezes. It's no longer responsive. I can't purchase. Am I failing at registering for a class on failing? Why am I even trying to take a $100 workshop on how to fail? I have been doing it so well for free. Guess I'm a perfectionist. I haven't even had any training yet. Really, I'm a natural. I write to the company. They are helpful and tell me they will look into the issues. Meanwhile, they provide me with a workaround. I try the workaround. It continues to freeze once I enter my credit card information. I try another browser, go through all the steps, enter all my information, go to purchase, and now my credit card gets declined because my credit card company, understandably, thinks these repeated attempts to purchase are fraudulent. I get an email from my credit card company. I reply, yes, it was me attempting to make the purchase. I go back to the Eventbrite page, which is now refreshed because I was taking too long, taking all my information with it. I am continuing to fail at registering for a how to fail course. Am I this much of an expert? At this point, I had spent over half an hour failing at registering for the how to fail course. I start over. I am determined to fail more successfully. I enter all my information again, and finally, it works. I am registered. I write back to the company. This was the most frustrating experience trying to register I've ever had, and I absolutely would have given up had the course not sounded so interesting. And if we weren't in the middle of a pandemic where such a course seemed particularly appealing. Also, I had nowhere I needed to go.
We want to thank the storytellers for sharing these intimate pieces of their lives, the event hosts who welcome us into their homes, and the audiences who come to our shows and listen to this podcast. Music was composed by Arlene Pakulin. And for more information on the podcast, the book, event, or to join our mailing list, please visit storieswedonttell.org.